It is often misunderstood as sort of a to-do list for women.
Deaconess Elizabeth Ullman, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman.
Or something that we have to strive to be, and it's very often pulled out of its moorings. It's pulled out of its context and not really put into the context of the rest of the Book of Proverbs.
Learn more about demystifying the Proverbs 31 woman at issuesetc.org.
If I ever write this letter, all the pages I could write.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 18th. Time to go through some listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. We keep both of these channels of communication open all the time. Of course, you can email us anytime, talkback@issuesetc.org. We know that many of our listeners, not just many, the vast majority of our listeners listen on demand. That means they're not listening in real time. They don't have an opportunity to join the conversation that way, but they can by sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or by giving us a call on the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. So whenever, wherever you listen, if you want to join the conversation, ask a question or add something, suggest something, criticize something, 618-223-8382.
Well, unless Dr. Alvin Schmidt or Dr. Adam Francisco contact us here in the near future, it's you, me, and our listeners for the next hour and 10 minutes on listener email and the dubious Issues Etc. comment line.
I'm sure you're just thrilled about that.
Absolutely. Remember, I worked at a former place of employment. I used to have like these pains in the back of my neck.
Oh gosh, I remember you went through what was that?
Flexol.
You went through Flexol like a tube a week.
But since I've been here, the only time I need Flexol is when I do listener email.
I was just mentioning that to my wife. I said life must be much less stressful for Jeff lately, because I remember those days, the Flexol days, the constant smell of Flexol.
Do you remember that, Craig? The smell of Flexol. Do you remember that, Craig? Yeah, I mean, I put it on. I go through, I guess you call it a tube or something, a week.
Yeah, and then we moved over here, and I remember you still making Flexol runs to get some.
That's what I was going to say. Do you remember when he'd run out and then Walgreens stopped carrying it?
But it wasn't that long into our time here that I think the Flexol just became unnecessary.
But I could use some about right now. Craig, go make a run. All right, email. By the way, fresh bump music for the next hour and possibly 10 minutes. Thanks to Rebecca Curtis and her sidekick, her sister, Rosie Adel, a.k.a. the Gilbert Girls.
Sounds like a sitcom. But
sounds like a podcast to me. Shall we read?
That's actually a really, really good idea.
Wasn't there some show called the Gilbert Girls? Or
Gilmore Girls.
Oh, Gilmore. Yeah. Yeah.
But the podcast idea with those two sounds like a really, really good idea.
Oh, I'd listen to it. I'll tell you what.
I'm serious. I like that idea a lot.
If I had to listen to a podcast featuring the Gilbert Girls or Issues Etc. listener email, I'd choose the former. Hands down.
Let's talk about that more off the air. I like that idea a lot.
Okay. Email, shall we? Jerry writes, in your conversation about history books with Joy Pullman, you missed the real question. The 2016 election is still current events, not history. There has not been sufficient time passed to give an accurate accounting of something so recent in time. Thanks for the feedback and thanks for listening, Jerry.
Jerry, if you listen to the very end or near the end of that interview with Joy Pullman that we did yesterday, you will hear me ask that very question. It was actually a suggestion I was making to Joy that when we write our textbooks, they should lag current events by a decade or so, because we simply don't have the perspective, and in some cases, we don't have all the facts about current events. They're unfolding before our eyes in real time, and trying to write a history textbook about something that happened 2 years ago seems to me to be short-sighted, kind of the definition of short-sighted. You simply, unless you're just wanting to propagandize, you can't accurately represent what happened. You might not have proper perspective or the facts in order to write that history textbook. It's going to be biased one way or the other, and it's going to be incomplete one way or the other. So history textbooks need to let the time pass. They need to let the facts age, so to speak, so that all the detritus falls away and that they have a little perspective to look back, maybe have a little objectivity. That would help as well. Look back, do the research, go to the primary sources and write the history that way rather than trying to write it in real time. History's never written well in real time. The internet has proven that abundantly. So the fact that this was based upon the fact that one of these history textbooks for the advanced placement program that helps high school kids take courses in advance or test out of courses in advance before they enter college or university had a section on the 2016 presidential election seems to me to just be ludicrous. That's current events. That's for a class that can be taught in real time where the kids can read the press on one side of an issue and the other side of the issue. That is not for the digested form of history. Let's wait 10 years. Let's wait 15 years. Then we can have a chapter on the 20, and we should have a chapter on the 2016 elections. So I actually made that point and discussed that with Joy near the end of that conversation. You can hear it if you listen to it at the Listen On Demand page, issuesetc.org.
This AP history textbook that Joy was referring to during yesterday's interview, if Reagan was a racist, what will that history textbook 20 years from now call President Trump?
Well, who knows? I mean, all bets are off now, aren't they? All bets are off. The fact that the fact that they're including the 2016 election in the textbook tells me they can't wait to talk about it. They can't wait to draw conclusions. But you should. If you're writing history, you should wait to talk about it. You should wait. And this includes church history, too. You should wait to draw your final conclusions until some time has passed. And maybe a few people have died. Tell you the truth, the best history is written after the principles, the makers of that history, are dead. Then you can think more objectively about what was going on.
Hey, we don't have time. We got another email along the same vein.
But you want to get to it after the break.
But let's quickly tell our listeners about an interview with Ted Geese tomorrow and an opportunity to win a $25 gift certificate to your local movie theater.
We're going to be interviewing Pastor Ted Geese, doing a review of the movie Avengers Infinity War. I'm drawing this from my memory. And we have put a space at our Facebook fan page for you to leave your questions in advance, not only on that movie, but also on any of those Marvel movies that we have been reviewing that Ted has been watching on our listeners' behalf, facebook.com/issuesetc. You'll see it there at the top of the page. You can leave a question or a comment on the upcoming movie or on any of the Marvel movies. He's ready to talk about all of them, answer your questions. And the best question will get a $25 gift certificate to your local theater. So you can go see some movies on us as well. We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. The email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. The comment line, 618-223-8382.
Here's an email also dabbling with history textbooks. It comes from Bruce. He said, I just wanted to add a comment to the conversation from a week ago, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and religion in the public square. You and your guests wondered together how many in the mainstream media will glowingly cite MLK while at the same time denying that religion has a place in public discourse. I think the answer is quite obvious. They don't really know MLK was driven by his theology. I'm speaking purely from my own experience in public school in the 80s. But aside from his title as the Reverend King and the last line of the I Have a Dream speech referencing an old spiritual, we learned very little of him as a religious figure. It was only in grad school, when I ran across a book of his sermons, that it hit me how rooted in theology his civil rights activism was. It's of course obvious if you read anything he wrote, but high school textbooks don't often dig deeply into original sources. Now jump 30 years later, and a whole generation of adults who went through public school probably don't even realize he was anything but a political figure. As your frequent guest Terry Mattingly often notes, to the mainstream media, politics is the only thing that matters. So King's religion is only a minor side note from his background. As always, thank you for your very interesting and informative show. Thanks for the email, Bruce.
That's interesting. I would love to see someone go back and look at how King was being covered in major market newspapers during his life, during the time of his civil rights activities, and see whether or not they were glossing over his religious sensibilities, the roots of his pacifism, the roots of his belief in basic human rights in religion, whether or not they were glossing over it at the time, whether or not they were treating King as nothing more than just a political civil rights figure and not engaging his ideas. I think if you read the things that he actually wrote, if you read through the entire I Have a Dream speech, if you read through a letter from a Birmingham jail, when he's writing a letter to the Birmingham jail, he is being deeply critical of the American church. He's speaking as a clergyman, deeply critical of the American church on issues like this, on justice. Nowadays, sad to say, I think that there's an equal danger here, and that is that conservatives who should rejoice in the fact that although King was a classic Protestant liberal with very deep problems with the particulars of his theology, he did have a theological mooring to his ideas and to his activities. Sad to say, a lot of conservatives today also have fallen into the trap of viewing King and the civil rights movement as merely a political movement. Label it something, you know, categorize it as a social justice warrior thing. Well, look, the problem here is that social justice is a concern. Just because some people declare themselves to be social justice warriors does not mean that the church has nothing to say about justice in the public square, about civil rights, about human rights. If the church has nothing to say, if the church cannot speak with moral clarity on these things, then what authority can? Government? What is the government's basis in its authority to talk about justice? It's an abstraction nowadays. The church, even if it only treads only so far as natural law, is the only moral authority there is in this world to speak about that if we care about our neighbors. So while we may disagree with the particulars of King's theology, conservatives of all people should say, you know, if we're going to do social justice as we ought to for the sake of our neighbor, then we ought to do it the same way King did, rooted in our theology, rooted in what God has said clearly, and in what God has revealed in that natural way via natural law.
You know, Dr. Alvin Schmidt, in his book, How Christianity Changed the World, this is what he's been saying all along. People have not been informed about how religion or faith influenced major figures throughout human history.
It's a thesis of his book. And does he have a chapter in there on the civil rights movement?
That's a good question.
I can't remember if he does. He's got a chapter on everything. He covers just about everything. I wonder if he does with the civil rights movement. It'd be interesting to see. But I'd like to go back and see those newspapers, New York Times and Chicago Tribune and L.A. Times and the Southern papers as well, and see what they were saying, whether they were missing the religion angle on King when they were marching, when he was speaking, when he was still alive.
We have an email that's on the same topic. This is Tanya. She just wrote, anyone who has read Orwell and or understands socialism and Marxism can see what's happening. When the system controls what children learn and what the people see, collectivism and totalitarianism of various stripes is an easy sell. It sounds so warm and fuzzy on the surface. Equality or else. Sadly, the historians, in quotes, are leaving out the legacies of Hitler and Stalin. The inevitable fruit of collectivism and totalitarianism is death and destruction on a massive scale. There is no such thing as utopia, not on this earth, with only the flawed and failed philosophies of sinful man to draw upon. The Bible was banned from public schools long ago. Wonder why no public high school requires students to read Animal Farm or 1984 anymore? I know exactly why they don't. Knowledge is a form of power. Keeping kids ignorant of the Lord and Savior is the first and foremost devastating and egregious step. Keeping kids ignorant of history and neglecting to warn of the inevitable failure of collectivism, totalitarianism, and utopianism is the next. Thanks for the email, Tanya.
You know, when I was required, and it was required to read Animal Farm and 1984 when I was in high school, I did not understand what they were warning against. Like, I was just in high school, so I had no perspective to see what they were warning against. It was just something I was required to read. And it made, those are the kind of books you want to return to after you've lived a little bit. And then you can see what it is, how prescient they were in a lot of ways, and what the kind of things they are warning against. And Christians do well to do this. There's wisdom. This is one of the hallmarks of Luther's view of how Christians learn, is that there's wisdom in these writings that Christians can benefit from. Great wisdom that they can benefit from for the betterment and for the protection of their neighbors. You know, why should Christians be against something like collectivism or totalitarianism? I wrote a piece, when was it? 2008? I think it was back in 2008. When was the presidential election back then? I think it was somewhere around there. I wrote a piece called Vote for the Other Guy. It was on the presidential election, and it was simply explaining why Christians cannot vote in their own self-interest, why they have to vote in their neighbor's interests. That's why we exercise the vote. Now, if your own self-interest happen to overlap with your neighbor's self-interest, that's fine and good, but your neighbor comes first. You don't kind of back-engineer your neighbor's self-interest into your own. Well, I'm going to vote for what's good for me, and I'm going to assume it's good for my neighbor. No, you seriously consider what's best for your neighbor. And this is why Christians should oppose bad forms of government as well. Can Christians live under bad forms of government? Of course they can. But your neighbor suffers. Will the church survive bad forms of government? Yes. In fact, the church often thrives under bad forms of government, but your neighbor still suffers. So it's not simply about will the church live or die, or will I be robbed of my faith, or will they stop me from preaching the gospel? It is also about whether or not your neighbor suffers. He may suffer economically or physically or in any other way, but part of what God's word directs us to do in our personal lives, in our public lives, is to always put the neighbor first. The neighbor comes first. So whether we're voting or whether we are, say, deeply concerned about how our kids are being educated nowadays, always for the sake of our neighbor. Look, if it was just a personal preference, if it was just whether or not this is going to personally affect me. In a free America, you can isolate yourself ideologically, economically, so that it doesn't affect you. But it's helpful to remember it's not about you. It's about your neighbor. So that's why we're concerned about things like how our kids and everybody else's kids are being educated in things as mundane as history. Stay tuned.
People have confused pietism with piety and dumped piety along with dumping pietism. It's resulted in a real confusion about this.
Pastor Will Whedon, on his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case for godliness.
Any thought about dealing with how we actually live our lives is regarded as being, that's law. That's what we've been freed from. We don't have to think about that. Well, no. The whole point is, what does it look like to live with Jesus Christ having been crucified and raised from the dead?
You can meet and hear Pastor Whedon Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385.
We're churchmen, not company men. You're listening to Issues Etc.
40 years greatly blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
I hold this letter here in my hand. A plea, a petition, a kind of prayer. I hope it does as I have planned. Losing her again is more.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line.
That's some mood music going on there.
I don't pretend to understand it.
I don't either. Craig, where's that list of us, the bump music that Mrs. Curtis and Mrs. Adel? That was called what? Love Letter? Love Letter? That's from a group called Mates of State, Todd. Come on. You've got all their CDs, don't you? I guess it's not your CDs anymore. You got all their downloads or MP3s, whatever. What do the kids call it nowadays?
I don't know. I don't listen to very much music.
Neither do I, but apparently the Gilbert girls do. They know who Mates of State is.
Well, they've got teenagers to raise. They have to stay abreast of such things.
I think they only have one teen. I don't even think Anastasia's not a teenager yet, is she, Lynn? She is? Okay, yeah. Okay, so they have one. The Curtis have one teenager. I don't think Adels have any teenagers left.
Adels yeah. don't, but...
They will.
They have one with Anastasia, and Silas is probably 30.
Yeah, Silas, their oldest boy, the Curtis boy.
They all grow
close.
Up.
Do they?
You can't avoid it, so...
Sometimes I wonder if people grow up.
Me too.
All right. Rune listens in Latvia. Todd, do you know where Latvia is? Can you tell our listeners... A little geography here. Where is Latvia?
If you gave me a globe, I could probably find it eventually.
So the answer is no.
Former Soviet Union.
Okay. Somewhere.
Yes.
So north of Lithuania, Deaconess Fredrickson says.
Lynn is a... She is like having... It's like she's a human search engine.
Yes.
If you want to know
something...
We don't need
Google. We've got Deaconess
right.
Lynn Fredrickson.
It's like Alexa. You just ask.
She's Alexa.
And from the next room, she answers. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Anyway, Rune in Latvia writes, I have a question about marriage, Pastor Wilkin. I have just asked my girlfriend to marry me, and luckily, she said yes. But here's my dilemma. My fiancé is a Roman Catholic, and I'm obviously a Lutheran. So now the big topic is what church we should get married in. Is there any theological objections to a Lutheran being married in a Roman Catholic church? I know that I would have to go through a course in the Roman Catholic Church before getting married, and I fear breaking the Eighth Commandment if I have to pretend to believe all the non-scriptural Roman Catholic beliefs. Thanks for listening in Latvia, somewhere near the former Soviet Union, Rune.
Within the former Soviet, I know that much at least, north of Lithuania. There are two questions here, actually three questions. Marrying outside the faith to the actual wedding ceremony in a Catholic church. And three, it sounds as though this course would be asking for you to join the Roman Catholic Church. Don't do that. Don't join the Roman Catholic Church. I would rather that you would, through great, as the apostle says, through great patience and a constant show of Christ-like love, you would eventually bring around your spouse to be to the Lutheran faith. So that's, I think you should hold that out as a possibility. It's unclear from your email whether or not that actually is being asked of you, and in which case, just don't convert to Roman Catholicism. It wouldn't be honest because you wouldn't believe it. And even though they may say you don't have to believe it, still don't do it. And you would be putting yourself in danger, spiritual danger, to do so. Could you remain a believer? Of course you could, but there's the errors of Rome remain pretty pernicious. So don't do that. But as to being married in a Roman Catholic church, as long as you're not being required to confess anything that's in error, and I think you could probably, in consultation with the priest beforehand, make it abundantly clear that you're not going to be doing, you won't be wanting to participate in the Mass there. You don't want to do that as a Lutheran. That would be to violate your confession. You would simply be asked for the rite of marriage, a simple rite of marriage, not to include the Mass. Then I think you can do that in good conscience without any problem whatsoever. You can be married there. The location is, in a lot of ways, immaterial. The question is, what is in the rite of marriage that you're going to be asked to participate in that you can't, in good conscience, for doctrinal reasons, do as a Lutheran? And that needs to be a serious, honest conversation with the priest beforehand, with your spouse to be beforehand, so that everybody knows, you know, this is, I have some doctrinal integrity here, and I want to make sure that I'm not going to be required to say or do anything that would violate my beliefs. And generally speaking, you're probably going to find the priest to say, fine, we are not going to require you to do that to violate your confession. And they would be able to either modify or truncate the rite accordingly, and you still get legally married.
Hi, this is Pastor Steve Stolarczyk from Unionville, Michigan. I was just listening to the broadcast with the interview with Deaconess Ullman about her book on the Proverbs 31 woman. I was struck by the irony of the title, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman, as I think you guys alluded to on a couple of the questions and answers. Really, if anything, that fantastic Christ-centered understanding that she described certainly doesn't demystify it. It doesn't make it any more ordinary or, you know, demystical. It actually makes it far more glorious. So I appreciate the fantastic job that you guys did in explaining that. Thank you very much.
Well, bear in mind, authors often do not or seldom choose the titles of their own books. So that the title for the book may have been chosen by someone entirely apart from Elizabeth Ullman, but I think the point of the title is to say, we're going to take this Proverbs 31 woman and show you what the Proverbs 31 woman is really all about. Maybe I think I would have titled it Demythologizing, because the title 30, the Proverbs 31 woman is kind of an evangelical myth in a lot of ways, that there is this example of a sinless woman at the end of the book of Proverbs 31. You read this, and there is no mention of her faults or her sins. And the only conclusion you can draw is this is what you've got to be a Christian woman, which in which case you've been condemned already, or you have to conclude that this is about something other than simply the ideal wife, mother, and woman. It may be about that as well, but it's not only about that. Now, anytime you have scripture speaking in this way about someone or something that has no sin, it should point you in the direction of Jesus Christ, the only one who is truly without sin, which is exactly what she does in the book. She talks about there's several ways that this can be read rightly, pointing to Christ, and she has those there. It can be a depiction of the church. It can be a depiction of Christ himself. It can be a depiction of every believer in Christ. And those are the three things that she deals with in the book, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman, which happens to be the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, and can be found at our website, issuesetc.org, on every page, or can be had from Concordia Publishing House by simply giving them a call and ordering it, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman. If you can't remember the title, just say, I want that Proverbs 31 Woman book, and they know exactly what you're talking about. Or you can just say, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.
Or if you're a male, you could just say, I want the Proverbs 31 Woman. I wonder how the customer service department of CPH would respond to that request.
They probably haven't been prepped for that one. That's a conversation you should have with your pastor.
Can I put you on hold, please? I need to talk to my boss. Mark writes, after listening to an episode about the Lord's Supper and discussion on what should be done with the remaining elements after all have communed, I wondered if Exodus chapter 12 is instructive. There, God's instruction is to not prepare a meal greater in size than is needed for the household and to consume all of it before morning. I've been listening since the days when I requested cassette tapes of programs and continue to be blessed by your outreach. Thank you to everyone at Lutheran Public Radio. And thank you for listening. Even thank you for buying cassette tapes many moons ago.
When was the last time you dubbed cassettes of this show?
You know, Craig did that way more than me. That was part of his part-time job at KFUO occasionally. So we were talking about that the other day, that old machine we used to have. For a while, we just could dub one at a time. And then somebody, I don't know who it was getting rid of them, probably way light years ahead of us. New cassettes were going out, and we didn't. And we had the mass dubber that probably made, what would you say, six at a time, five or six at a time?
I thought it was 10 at a time. It had a lot of banks there.
Yeah, but
it made a ton of noise.
Quite a few of them weren't. Yeah, it was very loud. It was like a machine shop.
It was basically a giant cassette tape player that had a place to put like 10 cassettes at once, and you'd put the master in there, and then it would dub them at high speed and very low quality, too. You go back and listen to them, they're terrible. It would dub them at very high speed. So it would spin these cassettes through an entire hour of Issues, Etc. in probably, what, 3-4 minutes at the most. You get through an hour there, dubbing them at high speed. And it just made a racket in that back room, I remember.
It was big. I wonder what happened with that. I bet that, you know, I took some of our old computers, my dad did, to the junkyard, scrap. How much did we get, Deaconess? How much money did we get from the scrapyard for the...
$19.
Wow.
I'll bet that old cassette machine, we get $100 on that thing. We junked that thing today. Would you like to talk about Mark's comment about Exodus 12 and
yes,
remaining elements?
Yes. With caution, we might be able to make a little application there. And that is sacred meals ought to be prepared and ought to be eaten and ought to be handled afterwards as the sacred thing that they are. The Passover was a sacred meal. It was not an ordinary meal. That is quite obvious from the way that God directs them down to the smallest detail in its preparation and how it is to be eaten and even down to the ingredients. So it is a sacred meal. It's not on par with the Lord's Supper. It's not a sacrament in that sense. We could call it an Old Testament sacrament, but it made no ongoing promise beyond its first practice in Exodus chapter 12 that it was a means by which the angel of the Lord would pass over them. The angel of death would pass them by. And after that, it was a meal of remembrance. It wasn't a sacrament in the same way that the sacrificial system was in the Old Testament. But it was a sacred meal nonetheless, something God had commanded for them to do in perpetuity. And so the general principle there that we can derive from it is that sacred meals should be done according to the institution. That is, according to how they were commanded, how they were given by God in the first place, and not tampered with in the least. And since the reason for them consuming the entire thing and for having no more than the family could eat, and if you had a small family, you combined two families, things like that. The reason for that was to impress upon the people that this was the last meal they're going to eat in Egypt, and they would not be taking anything with them. That's why they had to consume the whole thing, and it had to be enough so that it could all be consumed, because the impression, eat in haste, eat with your belt tied around your waist and your shoes on your feet and ready to go, because as soon as you're done, when the morning comes, you're leaving. You leave no leftovers. You know, you do this when you're getting ready to go on vacation. You don't prepare a gigantic meal that's going to have tons of leftovers if your leftovers are going to go into the fridge and you go on vacation and they spoil while you're gone, unless you're Craig Feitinger and he doesn't believe that food spoils and he'll just come back and eat it anyway. But the whole point here is not so much that they wouldn't have leftovers, but so they would understand God is going to deliver you from Egypt. And part of your way of confessing that is finish everything and don't leave any leftovers. But the sacred meal is to be consumed, prepared, consumed, and treated afterwards as the sacred thing it is. That principle, I think, applies beautifully to both the Lord's Supper and to baptism. It applies to all the things that that occupy the life of the church. It applies to how we treat the house of God. It applies to how we regard the furniture that is appointed for the preaching of God's word. I recently watched a video of a pastor just walk past a perfectly good pulpit to preach from out in the middle of the congregation. Now, in principle, there's nothing wrong with preaching from out in the middle of the congregation. The problem is he walked past a perfectly good pulpit. The place that had been set up, appointed for the proclamation of God's word was of no use to him. He had a better way than that place and that space and that piece of furniture, the pulpit, that had been dedicated for the express purpose of the preaching of God's word. You know, if there is no pulpit, you don't need to use the pulpit. There is no pulpit. But if there is one, you use it. Why? Because the people who built this house of worship dedicated that for the preaching of the word. If they didn't want you to preach from it, they'd take it out. Right? So it goes to how we regard these things that have been set aside by either God himself or God's people in their Christian freedom for the things of God. The altar, the font, the pulpit, all those things that are there, how the pastor conducts himself when he is vested for the divine service, all of those matters, you're simply not showing reverence for reverence's sake. You're showing reverence because these are the things of God. If you don't believe they're the things of God, you treat them however you want to. You disregard them, you ignore them. But if you really do believe that these are the things of God, the Lord's Supper is Christ's own meal. More than that, it is Christ's body and Christ's blood. Then you treat it accordingly at every stage of the operation. This isn't rocket science. This isn't high-flown theology. This isn't a question of whether you're high church or low church. This is a basic question of where is Christ? What has Christ said? What has he given to his church? We're too influenced by modern evangelicalism that simply will not bow to anything holy. That it's simply modern evangelicalism has come to the conclusion that there is nothing sacred and nothing holy in this world. And so it treats nothing as sacred, it treats nothing as holy. The Christian church has taken a completely different view of these things. When Christ gives you something, puts it into your hands to be used as he has directed, then we treat these things as his and not ours. We treat these things, we regard ourselves as, well, what does Paul say? We regard ourselves as your servants for Christ's sake and stewards of the mysteries of God. And that's why that general principle can apply beautifully to the Lord's Supper there. It is Christ's supper, is Christ's body and blood, and all who partake and all who administer should treat it accordingly. We'll be right back. Is the Proverbs 31 woman primarily a prescription of how to become a better wife, mother, woman, or friend? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman at IssuesETC.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Emmanuel means God with us. God is with us at Emmanuel Lutheran Church and School at 1285 Main Street in Hamilton, Ohio, near Cincinnati. God is with us as we gather on Sunday at 8 and 10:45 a.m. for divine service. God with us in his word of forgiveness, with us in the waters of baptism, with us in the body and blood of Christ in Holy Communion, with us in the classrooms of our school and child care, serving children from age 3 to 8th grade. Join us for worship or enroll your child in our Christ-centered day school. Find us at EmmanuelHamilton.com.
Christ has died. Christ is risen. Christ will come again. This glorious good news is and always has been too good not to share. It compelled Peter, Paul, and the other apostles to the very ends of the earth, and it continues to drive Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missionaries even today. Learn more here in the April issue of The Lutheran Witness magazine. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor. And today, there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armed forces. The LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armed forces.
I'm assuming you got my message on your machine.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 18th.
Well, Wilkin, it looks like it's you and me for the last 23 minutes. No response from Dr. Schmidt or Dr. Francisco.
People don't realize that, well, first of all, even though the vast majority of our listeners are on-demand listeners, the show, we still produce the show live from 3 to 5 every weekday.
Central
time. We do it for a couple of reasons, because we have radio affiliates, terrestrial radio affiliates, and we do it for another reason. That is, it is really, really good discipline to keep the show clock, to keep the breaks, to keep all those things the way they are. It's good discipline. It makes for a much tighter, much better broadcast, so we do it for a number of reasons there. But it also, what people don't realize is, since it's, this is a show that's done in real time and live every weekday for 2 hours, it's also being produced live. It's live radio is being produced live, and sometimes that means that we are here pre-recording interviews. We pre-record a lot of stuff nowadays, but it also means the other end of the spectrum is sometimes we are waiting to hear from guests while the show is going on. Sometimes we don't know who we're going to be talking to or whether we're going to be talking to that person as the show progresses. It's been that way now. I've gotten used to it. People say, do you know what you're talking about today? And I can sometimes say, I think I know one of the guests because I think I remember recording the promo, but I'm not exactly sure who I'm going to be talking to today. It's just because a lot of it does still happen in real time. So Jeff's trying to get guests, doesn't get them. Listener email and the comment line.
It's bottom of the barrel here today on Issues, Etc.
Well, the comments aren't bottom of the barrel, but...
No, me reading listener email is bottom of the barrel. You know, we've got more than one promotion going on here at Issues, Etc. We mentioned the $25 gift certificate to your local movie theater in advance of tomorrow's interview with Pastor Ted Geese on any of the Marvel movies, any of them. Just post them at facebook.com/issuesetc. But we also have a great opportunity for you to receive, 5 years of Issues, Etc., Making the Case Conference DVDs from all the conferences?
Yeah, every presentation.
6 conferences total?
Every element and presentation of the 6 conferences we've conducted so far since our return. Every single speaker, every service, every hymn sing, all of them on an audio DVD. How do they do that?
Well, we have a promotion called Issues, Etc. What does this mean?
Aha! You've sparked my memory, yes.
So how do they proceed?
Well, okay, so if you listen to the program on a regular basis, you will hear, usually at the beginning of the show open, you will hear a listener chiming in during that open montage, and they will say something like, I'm so-and-so, and I live in so-and-so, and I love Issues, Etc. What we're asking for is a version of that, and that is we want you to say who you are, where you listen, maybe even what you do while you listen, but more importantly, answer the question, Issues, Etc., what does this mean? Or to put it in kind of subjective terms, what does Issues, Etc. do for you? How does it bring God's word to you? We want your answer to that question in a nutshell. You can call 618-223-8382. That's the comment line. Leave your answer. If you mess up, we can fix it. If you want to try again, call back and we can do that as well. And we simply want to know who you are, where you listen, and what Issues, Etc. means to you. And if you do that and we use your statement, your answer on the air, if we can use it on the air, then we will send you this audio DVD of every one of the presentations from all of the Issues, Etc. Making the Case conferences. We'll send those to you as a way of saying thank you for doing that. Don't worry about if you mess up. It doesn't have to be air ready. You can stammer, you can stutter. We can clean up almost anything and make you sound like you are one take wonder. But if you want to come record it again and get it right, that's fine too.
If Craig can clean me up, trust me, he can clean your mistakes up. Lord Feichtinger will be here till 2 hours after the show tonight, just fixing all the edits that need to be made from me reading 1 hour and 10 minutes of listener email.
The mistakes are so numerous that it will take 2 hours to edit 1 hour.
Yeah. Yes, Tori, you won't be home for supper tonight. This comes from Jeff. He says, hello, my American Lutheran brothers and sisters in Christ. I'm a 42-year-old husband and father from Winkler, Manitoba, Canada. I am a returning emailer. It's the first time I've ever heard that term before. My wife has been watching a YouTuber who is Mormon, and we are Lutheran. I tried my best to explain to my beautiful wife what Mormons believe, but let's face it, you guys would know best. Thanks for the email. Jeff, G-E-O. FF.
Oh, he spells it the fancy way.
I'm not going to comment.
Okay. I think it entirely depends upon what the particular video, or in this case, what the YouTuber is doing on YouTube. It entirely depends on that. I enjoy tinkering with my with my truck. It's 18 years old. It needs a lot of tinkering. I'm kind of hesitant, even though I have the best mechanic in all of the universe, in the world. I'm hesitant to give him too much business every year. So I like to learn things and learn how to do things on YouTube. And I don't care whether the person teaching me how to change the brake calipers, I don't care what his religious affiliation is. It doesn't matter to me as long as he shows me how to do it and doesn't mislead me or put me in any kind of danger. I will watch that video. So it entirely depends on what the YouTuber has to say on their videos. If they are teaching the Bible, I would be very cautious when it's a Mormon. If they're teaching you how to bake bread, I wouldn't care one little bit. If they are talking to you about raising your children, I would be perhaps less cautious than if they're interpreting the Bible, but I would still be cautious nonetheless, because after all, this is their advice might be perfectly good, but it might also be rooted in their rather bizarre theology as well, and you could probably find far better teaching there. If, on the other hand, if they're teaching you how to set up a fish tank, I wouldn't worry about it one little bit. So it all depends on what they're teaching you to do. If they are teaching Mormonism, if they are talking to you about the doctrines of Mormonism, about the practices of Mormonism, now I don't have a problem with you watching that because it's a really good way to learn about what Mormons believe, as long as you're not doing it to learn to believe as a Mormon does. If you want to know about Mormonism, go ask a Mormon. Now, they might not be able to give you a complete answer or an accurate answer, but it's a good place to start. That goes to whether or not she's watching these to learn to educate herself about the complex of errors that is Mormonism. But you say, as you say at the end of your email, we regularly have guests on talk about the teachings and the practices and the goings-on in Mormonism. One of the our reoccurring guests is Bill McKeever of Mormonism Research Ministry. He's written excellent books that I would recommend you get: Mormonism 101, Mormons in Their Own Words, and several others that are excellent books to kind of help the Christian orient themselves when they're looking at Mormonism. So I would be concerned there on those two fronts, whether they're teaching the Bible, whether they're doing moral teaching. That's of a big concern. If your wife is simply watching because she's curious about this crazy thing called Mormonism and she wants to hear it from the horse's mouth, I wouldn't have any concerns there as long as she's not watching it in order to believe as Mormons believe. That's not a problem at all. With the advent of social media and with the advent of everybody having a blog and everybody having a podcast and everybody having a YouTube channel, you're going to find a lot of stuff out there. There are cases where probably watching a Mormon teaching you about your kids is going to be better than watching an evangelical teaching you about raising your kids. So you have to be discerning whether it is a Mormon or a Christian or any confession of faith. You have to be discerning about all of that. Let's take a break, and when we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, a little bit more listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. That email address, anytime, whenever, wherever you listen, talkback@issuesetc.org. You could win an audio DVD of every presentation from all six Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Record your answer to the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? On our comment line, 618-223-8382. If we play your answer during Issues Etc., we'll send you a conference audio DVD of almost 50 hours of teaching. 618-223-8382 and answer the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? Please be sure to mention where you listen.
Lutheran Elementary School Association is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During April, if you open a federal FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the Lutheran Elementary School Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoda, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Text me, send an email, link me up, give me a call. I'm ADD on AOL and trying to read the writing on the wall.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. 10 more minutes of listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. And the comment line, 618-223-8382.
If my math is correct, tomorrow will be 50 days away from the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
It's filling up pretty quickly. It's filling up more quickly than it has, certainly more quickly than it did last year, and more quickly than I think it has in any previous year. So we got that limit of 400. That's actually not a fake limit. It's a real limit of how many people we can feed at once and how many people we can pack into one room at once, because we do the conference. If you've never been to one, we do the conference. There aren't breakout sessions. There aren't multiple speakers in different venues. Everybody gets the same conference. We gather together. We have a little opening service, and we get going. We have several speakers. We have some breaks. We have a meal. We do a hymn sing. We have speaker, 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 and it runs from Friday night through all day Saturday. And so everybody's hearing the same speakers, and it runs like a train. It runs, we have to run it like a train, because there's absolutely no wiggle room in the schedule to do it. And I've always been excited about the conferences, to because you get a chance to meet so many listeners. You get a chance to see these people who are guests regularly, see them, talk to them, all those kinds of things. That makes it exciting. And we've always said, if you enjoy listening to Issues Etc., then the conference is for you, because it's like Issues Etc. for two straight days. Plus, you're surrounded by fellow listeners. You have an opportunity to interact with the speakers there as well. And the speaker lineup this time, I think we have hit the sweet spot. We've had great speaker lineups every time. But this time, Jeff, I think we have kind of hit the sweet spot of Issues Etc. guests and speakers. I'm anxious to hear some new ones. Some of the ones that have been regulars are not coming back. We're holding them off for perhaps a future conference. And we've got some great stuff. We're going to have Angus Manoos talking about scientism. I am anxious to hear what he has to say, because every time I talk to Angus Manoos on the air, I learn something. And we're going to have, what else are we going to have? We're going to have Hans Feeney of Lutheran Satire talking about justification, its centrality there. He's going to be making the case for the centrality of the doctrine of justification. We're going to have Hank Hanegraaff talking about two subjects. He's kind of our keynote. He's going to be talking about Islam, making the case against Islam, and making the case against the prosperity gospel. He's written numerous books on the prosperity gospel. I didn't really understand the word faith movement until I read Hank Hanegraaff's books on the word faith movement, and then I understood it for what it actually teaches. It's a really creepy thing. It's much more than just name it and claim it. It has a creepy view of the Bible and a creepy cosmology and a very creepy Christ too. So we're going to have him speaking on that as well. Will Wheaton is going to be making the case for, I think, for Lutheran piety, if I'm not mistaken.
Godliness.
Godliness. And he's written that fantastic book, Thank, Pray, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. And he is raring to go with that. And other speakers we're going to have, it's going to be real. I'm excited about it. The sad thing is, usually during the conference itself, Jeff and I are so busy, I don't always get to hear all the speakers, what they have to say. I have to wait and listen to it later on the audio DVD. But I'm hoping to be able to, since this thing should run by now, we've got Lynn. She runs the conference now. I should actually be able to sit down and listen to some of the speakers as well. It's coming up June 8th and 9th right here in Collinsville, Illinois. You can register online. Remember, it's filling up fast. Issuesetc.org. Or if you need some help, just call Lynn, 618-223-8385. She can help you do anything because she is a human Alexa.
And she knows where Latvia is.
She knows where Latvia is, and she can help you register as well. Registration's $120. We cover three meals on Saturday and a couple on Friday and a couple on Saturday. Child care's absolutely free if your child is 1 through 12. Is that right? And we also have hotel information. That's another reason to get busy, because the blocks that we've set aside for hotels, for your reservations for hotels, will expire, I think, about a month before the conference itself. So you want to get in on that. We have a slightly reduced rate at three hotels in the area. You can stay wherever you want to, as far as we're concerned. But we just hope that you show up for the conference.
Issuesetc.org or 618-223-8385. You know, we just can't, in words, do justice to everything of a conference. I mean, I'm thinking you're going to have an opportunity to have Jonathan Fisk sign his new book, Echo. Craig Parton's book, Religion on Trial. It's coming out in a second edition. He will be there signing that book.
They're going to be there signing those books, and they're going to be the guests for the live broadcast that kicks off the entire. You get to walk in, you see us set up, our little equipment all set up. We do 2 hours of a live broadcast, just like we're doing right now, to kick off the conference. The guests are right there. There's an audience mic, and it's, you get to see the live show going on, and then that's just the beginning.
Pastor Whedon will be signing his book you mentioned earlier, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey. We have evening prayer Friday night, morning prayer Saturday morning. We have a hymn sing led by Pastor Whedon. It all ends, as it should, with the divine service. And I don't know who the preacher is. Who's the preacher for the divine service?
Well, if we get permission, it's usually me. But we have to ask the pastor's permission. I'm not just going to waltz in there because I'm the host of the program. We got to do things decently and in order.
So that's Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois, 15 miles east of St. Louis. One last email. Kathleen, she listens in West Covina or Covina, California. Do you recall any especially informative episodes on the subject of the authenticity of the Book of Josephus?
That's an excellent question. Yes, we have talked with Dr. Paul Meyer, who has written an actual book about Josephus. It is an edition of Josephus, so that you not only get to learn about Josephus and the work there, he regards it as an extremely reliable historical source, an ancient historical source. And all you got to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org. There's a little search engine up there that we hope to, by the way, improve sometime here in the future. And if you type in Josephus or Paul Meyer, you will probably, well, if you type in Paul Meyer, you're going to find a lot of things there because he's been on the show many times. But if you type in Josephus, spelled correctly, you will find at least 1 hour with him talking about that ancient historian. He has so many insights into that. He has insights into not only the life of that historian, but other, I think he's written a book on a Christian historian called Eusebius as well. Highly recommend those books and those hours that we spent with him talking about it. Just use the search engine. They will find it for you. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to be reviewing that movie, Avengers Infinity War Part 1, and the Marvel series with Pastor Ted Geese. You can win a $25 gift certificate to the theater of your choice by having the best question or comment on that movie or on the Marvel series. You can just leave it at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. We've left space there. Just look for the picture of Infinity War. Leave your question or comment there for Pastor Ted Geese, and it'll be your opportunity to win that $25 gift certificate. We'll talk with him tomorrow about that on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.